Hello, you have tuned into The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexi Toliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, interesting, exciting people about their favorite films and give them a recommendation based on their taste. We're about to get into our beautiful episode with Lazy Susan, who you would know from RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under, where they freaking won the show. It's a great chat that I have with them. In the meantime, producer Em and I are here, and we just want to have a couple of little words and introduction together. A couple of little words.
It's been a while since you've been in the studio with me, hasn't it?
It has been. I've been running around.
You've been busy.
I've been a busy little boy.
Yes.
And a busy little bitch.
Yes.
By day and by night, I change it up.
And because you've been a busy little bitch, we do have a tiny little bit of news, which is regular episodes will be coming out fortnightly just for a little period.
For a little bit. Well, we're figuring some things out.
Exactly.
Because of how beautiful all our audience is, this show, it's given me some great opportunities to go around Australia and do some stand-up that I haven't done for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've reconnected with my love of stand-up and I really love it. I've been so happy. And everyone that's been coming to the show VHS, I just finished in Melbourne. It was so beautiful. I had such a nice time there and just so many people, you know, connecting with people of this show and that listen to this show and that appreciate films in the same way that I do. It's been the best time of my life.
Aww.
I'm so joyed. And a lot of it is because of how cool this show is and how great the stuff that Em and I get to make on this show is. But it just means that we need to not even take my foot off the gas, just saying fortnightly episodes for a little bit.
Yep.
But in between them, hopefully we're going to be doing some drops of some fun other content, maybe less of the guest stuff, maybe some more stuff of Em and I.
Yes, Alexi will always feature. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah, well, it's don't worry, we're not getting a new host in.
No,
replace myself. Go, guys, I need to take some time off. Can we get someone else to go host the show for me? But next week we're going to have a little episode of a podcast you and I guested on together called Spooko.
Highly recommend tuning in next week for Spooko. I'm sure there's already a lot of crossover fans, but
absolutely,
it's a fantastic podcast. So
it's your favorite podcast outside of the Alexi Toliopoulos universe.
And I abused my position here to weasel my way onto the show. So yes, really highly recommend everyone tune in. And then the week after, normal episode and so on and so forth. Just for a little period.
Yeah. Just a little period while we figure some stuff out, some timing stuff. But also just kind of like, you know, what's the go? We've been doing the podcast for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to evolve and stuff. So hopefully there will be some small little evolutions going on. But
absolutely,
probably not changing too much.
Not too much.
I really like this show and I like the way I do it. But, you know, I like to be creative too. And I've been on a big creative hot streak recently. So check out the episode that we're going to release next week, which is a guest spot on Spooko. It's a great podcast. That's why I'm putting it in the feed. But in the meantime, enjoy this fortnightly rendition of The Last Video Store. We'll be back to normal eventually. I'm certain of it.
Mm-hmm.
But just taking a little pause while I'm running around doing crazy, crazy stuff around Australia. I've got my Encore Sydney Comedy Festival show of my new stand-up show, VHS. It is on Sunday, the 17th of May. And everything else is sold out for this show. Basically sold out around the entire country. This is the last show of this leg of the tour for now. Who knows? Maybe I'll never do it again. Unlikely. It's a really good show. I'm having a great time doing it. But for now, this is the last time. Sunday, 17th at the Grand Electric in Sydney. Tickets are still available maybe. Maybe they're not. It's selling really fast. But please come hang out with me there and make my dream come true of making you laugh in person instead of just on the train when you're listening to me on the earphones. Welcome to another episode of The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexi Toliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, interesting, and exciting people about their favorite movies. And yes, we do so in the style of an old school video store rental combo, which includes a staff pick recommendation from my big ass movie brain based on their big ass beautiful taste. And now the big ass sitting across from me today is definitely, I would say, a dream guest. We've been trying to tee this up for a little while.
It's true.
But we have one of the winners of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under. We have got the incredible, the effervescent, the wonderful, the cinephilic Lazy Susan.
Cinephilic.
You are definitely cinephilic.
With a giant fat ass.
A fat ass cinephile, much like myself, I'd say.
Well, I wore the pads just special, and I'm glad I did. I know your normal setup. We're at my house.
We're in your back closet here.
This is my gorgeous, this is the maid's quarters.
This is the walk-in?
Yeah, I let you in. But I was like, oh, well, normally there's a bench.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of slack off. Yeah. Maybe not cinch.
But then
I realized we were in my neck of the woods and you were going to see these long legs.
See those long legs.
And I know you fucking freaks have been waiting to see these little pins down here on Miss Alexi. So this is a good start.
And in your honor, I have tucked as well.
Yes,
of course.
And every episode before this.
But always in your honor. In your honor.
So this is for her. But now, show the feet. There's the first feet.
Yeah, the first time you've seen New Balance kicks. And they match your
famous
outfit.
Feet?
I don't think I am.
I made the mistake of saying that around Nina Oyama the other day. She was like, oh, I am on famous feet.
She got a great set of toes on her.
You're like, I started the page.
Yeah, I'm just an admin, so I get to choose if I'm on or not.
It's like a Wikipedia admin who like needs citation. Are they good? But that's the first one that's going to go on your profile.
I think so, yeah. They go, they're clothed, the shoe's on, but...
I'm pretty sure the Venn diagram of foot fetishists who have admin control over famous feet and your podcast is just...
Yeah, it's the one circle. Guy. It's the one guy who loves both.
Yeah, so could you set that one up and put these little piggies up on there?
Well, Lazy, I'm so glad to have you on the podcast because I remember I messaged you... Around the time that you were on Drag Race, I couldn't stop because I was like, I think I even messaged you almost an exact quote, you are a true artist. Because I think I just straight away go, oh, this is a kindred spirit to me out there. Someone who I can tell who has, we're about the same age. You have the exact same pop culture, like the same pop culture, like with pop culture withdrawal that I have of sucking it all in and just pushing it back out. And I just thought you were just fucking amazing on that show. And
why were you watching Drag Race Down Under?
I've watched every season of Drag Race. Not all the international seasons, but I've seen every season.
Like Mexico, Spain. I've seen
I watched the first of season of Spain.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. Yeah. But then I just admitted I've seen all of them. So I had I think I overloaded and now I go, I need to take a pause.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah. Also, it's like, it's not a show that should require your full attention, like something with subtitles.
Yes.
So it doesn't quite work as a second screen experience if you don't speak Spanish.
And, you know, it's my job to watch movies, so I do need passive entertainment through the screen and other times.
Absolutely.
So.
Just a nice background noise. Yeah, well, that's incredible. I can't believe you watched that. That's amazing.
Well, I truly think you were spectacular on the show. And since then, I was like, oh, I have to get you on because I just want to hear your thoughts about movies. And I want you to take me back, paint the picture, take me back in time to the video store that you grew up with.
So... I am, I'm a child of an American, a big American man who was completely defined by his love of movies.
Wow.
Like, he grew up in Massachusetts, kind of in the same town as Louis C.K., which I think is really bizarre to think about now. But
you don't
then
have to think about it.
I was like, why am I, it's like, oh, and for a while that would have been a thing of pride, but then I'm like, oh, I learned this information too late. But then he was just like so excited to kind of escape.
Mm.
This is like a long backstory for other people.
No,
but
I love
you know what?
This.
You're getting it.
Thank you.
He was like,
I hope
longing
you guys
to
are
escape.
All listening right now. You're all getting it.
My father was longing to escape his New England life. And no one quite understood him.
Mm.
And so he dove into the world of cinema.
Yeah.
And fell in love and decided to become an actor and then moved to New York to become an actor and then met my mother, who was a theater director. They moved back to Australia, but he continued his love of the American cinema.
Wow.
And became like, just this kind of encyclopedia of cinema, American cinema.
We've got to get dad on.
Yeah, he'd go off on this stuff. But he would collect like VHS. So in my house, all the walls were like VHS.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like full bookshelves, you know, beautiful. In the place of any kind of literature.
My God, so your home is like the video store,
basically.
And
he used to lend out videos to people, like family, friends and everyone. So we had like a little... notebook of all the videos that had gone out.
Oh my God.
And he'd walk around and be like, you are gonna, like, to like my 10-year-old friends, be like, you're gonna love this. You're gonna fucking love this. This is good. Take that. And so much so that, like, he then at the local video store, the Video Easy in Tacoma.
Yeah, wow.
Vale, she's gone. But
I hope so. It'd be strange if that was the last surviving one.
The last one. Well, the last video store. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy that Blockbuster, that Netflix show, stole your concert.
I know, a few years before me too. Yeah,
fuck.
Such a bummer.
I know. anyway, was that Randall Park?
Yeah, I think it was. Hey, good. I never watched it.
You didn't watch that incredible Blockbuster
I didn't
show?
Do it.
Wow.
I'm more in the indie vein. I like the indie.
I feel like that's
stores.
Lost media now, though, so it's probably a bit more. Yeah. Anyway, but so he was so well known at the Video Easy because he was in there every second day, and we would like rent like 14 or like, you know, like he just became. He got this like medallion from renting there that I'd never seen any other human being have, but it gave him like this like unlimited weeklies and that sort of thing for the same price as Seven. And they would see him and they'd be like, "Will, you're here?" And like he'd be like, "Hey boys, what's going on?" And
kind of. So you're like true video store royalty.
He was
basically
a king.
Yeah.
My father was a king.
And you're a princess.
Yes.
The princess of the video
the
store.
Yeah.
My God. Well, you know, it was Kismet. Of course you had to come on this show.
Well, that's it. That's it. I mean, like truly, and he was the ride or die. Mm. Bitter to the end, the last video store patron.
Oh my God.
And like started, like when they started closing down, just grabbing it all off the shelves and bringing it to the house. And then has recently picked back up on physical media because he went through a period of being like, no, well, the future is streaming or whatever. You can get it all on this thing. And now he's like, fuck it.
I'm so glad that, you know, to hear of a fallen soldier of the video store and physical media realm to then get back in the front lines and go,
Now we're going back.
We're fighting streaming. We're going back to the shelves.
It's incredible.
Well, I really want to have you in here at the moment as well because you've got this new series that's about to come out called The Witchy Girls.
Yes.
Which is, I've just seen the first episode. I'm marvelized by this. it's a new supernatural drag comedy series that you've been producing in partnership with Comedy Republic, co-created by you and Zelda Moon.
Yes.
And I think this is so squarely in my wheelhouse. Once again, I go, we're the same age. I think we have the same taste as well, the overlap.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching this, I'm feeling so many of the shows I loved growing up. Definitely Goosebumps, the TV series, feels so big part of this.
The Guiding Star.
And Round the Twist, which was like the biggest influence I ever had, I would say, is Round
That's
the Twist.
That's changed your personality?
Changed my personality, Amazing. Shaped who I am. And then the other one, which I don't know if I don't know if anyone ever talks about, but there was a show on Disney Channel that I was obsessed with called So Weird, which was like children's X-Files about this young teenage girl who her mum is a country music singer and they're on a tour bus and they like go on this, they go on like the, and she goes around America
rings a bell.
Finding like little ghosties and stuff like that. And that I always loved that show.
Wow.
And this was like the first thing I was seeing, this is embracing those kind of feelings of that like turn of the millennium, building up to the turn of the millennium, I guess supernatural teen properties. Can you talk to me about your love of those types of shows and channeling into something that's definitely made for adults?
Oh, what do you mean? This show that we've made is for children, of course. Goosebumps, huge. Definitely, like, a lot of those Canadian co-pros, like, everything where it's like, this is, like, weird upstate New York, but it's actually just a Canada doubling. So it was like, God, America's so green and lush.
It's a leafy part of Toronto. They were looking at maybe somewhere in Quebec.
Yeah, and, like, all these actors are mysteriously also in Degrassi at the same time.
And they all have curtain bangs. They're all guys with curtain bangs.
Why is Ryan Gosling there? Who was in an episode of Goosebumps. Goosebumps was so important. And then like Zach Files, another Canadian show about kind of a, and then because my father had been like, you got to get obsessed with X-Files, new X-Files. I mean, X-Files and, Twilight Zone, new Twilight Zone, like all of these things. But like, I don't know. I was just obsessed with horror and like the, I don't know, like there's something about that production that kept pulling me back in of like shitty, like low production monsters. Yeah. It feels so friendly and warm and kind, like these spaces, like your father is suddenly transformed into an evil plant.
So is it kind of like that monster kid attitude that you're trying to bring back with this?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the sad thing about our show, The Witcher Girls, is that it's, just kind of a bunch of millennial tragics, like trying to rehash the glory days. And we realized that like halfway through, we're like, this is so cool. And then we're like, wait a second, this is like, I don't know, when like all those like Coppola and like everyone just tried to like throw back to the films of their youth, like, you know, the way that George Lucas has been trying to get back to the serials of like Rocket Man and whatever, that he was like, I love this, I'm gonna do the Phantom, like da da da, and you're like, that's so lame. And then you realize that you're doing the same thing, but for your childhood.
Oh, no, I am so in on it because it has like this great like comedic energy that you've infused with. Like it's got a very modern sense of humor to it. And like straight away, like the first thing you see is like Alaska on like this big titted like TV head rack. Performance and just an incredible fun performance. Can you talk about, I guess, even like the setup of something like that, like the creation of like the more abstract like monster type characters in the show.
So we developed this concept for a show. Like if we could be on any show, like if we could pitch it, because I think every time you like when you get into the world of comedy or drag or whatever, you're like, okay, well, what's the pitch? Like,
what's your dream?
How do you make like a pilot of your like style, right? And we started that conversation long before there was any kind of demand, and arguably still not. But we were like, yeah, we would want to do like Monster of the Week, like, Buffy, Charmed, Goosebumps, that kind of zhuzh. And we were like, well, we just need to like honor that tradition by having as many stupid like monsters as possible, but like kind of with a twist. So we have a gorgeous evil computer that was the face of Alaska, and definitely the way that we could get a cameo from Alaska Thunderfuck, the most famous drag queen in the world, just so you know, listener at home.
I think they know.
If you don't know this, this podcast is this about drag?
Right now it is,
But yeah, the only way to kind of comp someone like that in is like to have them like on a computer screen or something like that. So we were like kind of built that one around the idea that one day we would be able to like comp maybe a big get in there if we could get like 20 minutes of their time. And so it was kind of retconned around the idea that we just needed to like,
so well.
And like I was so, and like the incredible Victoria Bitter, who's a Melbourne drag queen, put on her ginormous breastplate and her tiniest skirt and
to just physicalize the performance.
Yeah. And like truly had no time to do it. Cause we're like shoved this poor tiny Hungarian girl inside of a computer head, and it had an iPad that was like a centimeter away from her nose, and we're like getting someone off set to like do live playback of this performance, and she's like hearing it muffled through this plastic helmet, and then just trying to like act alongside this performance, which was incredible and a lot of suffering. And then directly opposite VB was Geraldine Hickey, who's in this giant Millennium Bug outfit that we made. That was this,
by the way, unrecognizable. Geraldine, one of my friends, I go, that was Geraldine. I literally had no idea until you said it now.
We had the get of the century.
Oh my God.
An Australian comedy like icon in Geraldine Hickey, and we're like, that's amazing. Now get inside that fucking bug suit because you're going to be this much of Geraldine. And the rest.
And we're going to be painted green like a big bean.
Yeah. It was just incredible. And Geraldine was so amazing. Yeah. Like, we were like, we are so sorry. Because it was like a hot day in a studio that didn't have aircon, that like Geraldine was like shoved inside of like a neoprene tube with no access to her arms, just two little bug claws that she could operate via string inside. Yeah. And she was like, no, it's fine. No, oh, dude, this in the jungle. Oh, it's okay.
Well, that is the energy you can expect from Witchy Girls. Yes. It comes online very soon, but even sooner than that, you are doing some live presentations with it. Can you tell us about those? Yeah,
we're doing some live shows. we're doing our first one at the Capitol, which was a decision that was made by Comedy Republic, our incredible partners, which was a very optimistic decision because that's a 570-seater. And
well, the Breast Tour has just begun,
but we're on the cusp. We're 30 seats away from selling that.
Unreal,
And then so we'll be releasing the first two episodes, kind of doing a half showing the episodes, half live show experience extravaganza.
Yeah, cool.
Is hopefully the right word.
I think so.
Yeah, depending on how it all comes together. Yeah, exactly.
It's got the brightest roof in Melbourne.
Exactly. I mean, it's the roof is giving putt putt mini golf. But a huge scale. And then in the next two episodes, we'll be premiering at Comedy Republic.
Beautiful.
So people can come along to that. And then the final two episodes, I think we'll be doing at Acme.
Beautiful.
The incredible Acme, hopefully in the larger theatre.
Yeah.
And yeah, it should be good.
I think it's so great to be able to release a web series, but also have like an interactive in-person experience with it too. Like I think that's a
I think a lot of people have felt very excited by the fact that I think web series, anyone that works in the kind of independent film scene in Australia is like, oh, we're doing a web series. Oh, well, that's going to be fun. Like 3 days on a set where I'm not going to eat.
Yeah.
I'm going to be overworked by kind of like a bunch of random, like usually queer people being like, yeah, could you please do this for us? And then it will just never exist.
Yeah.
And it'll be memory hold for all time.
But this is not the case. This is so good. At the very least. And like the production value is freaking wonderful.
It's ridiculous.
It looks beautiful, which makes me more so excited to send you out through the store. You have to hop, leave your home, drive to the store, come back, pick out a few movies.
Exactly.
I'm going to send you to the weekly section because I really want to talk to you about the time with cinema that you and I are growing up going to those video stores. So come back, we'll talk about them, and then I'll give you a recommendation based on them.
Weekly.
Wow, what a beautiful stack of delightfully witchy movies. Each one represents you more than the last in this pile.
God, I hope not.
Unfortunately, I think they do. The first movie you've picked, we're going all the way back to 1996. This is, I would say, a teen horror classic.
It better be.
And this is one of the ones that I remember seeing it vividly at the time because it played on TV so much in Australia. Oh. I think it must have played on Channel 10. I remember the ads quite, like the little advertisements
late
for this
night.
Movie.
Yeah.
But this is one I revisited again a couple of years ago. You have picked out from 1996, The Craft.
Cult.
Now take me back to Andrew Fleming's teen classic of a Catholic school newcomer who falls in with a clique of teen witches.
Better watch out. Sorry, I'm going to have a little sip.
You may have
a
sip.
And then you can tell me quickly, who is the diva who does the new weekly, weekly new release science fiction?
I hate to tell you, I think she's AI. It's not. It is actually.
I'm sorry.
The music producer and DJ Joyride.
Yeah.
And I think it's his voice that he turned into a female voice with AI.
I wanted that woman to show up someday. I love that. Is my favorite part of your whole show.
You can be the visualization of her,
like that Rocky Horror album. New release.
Well, what section do you want The Craft to be coming out of? Horror or like cult?
Teen cult horror.
Yeah, we'll play them all.
Teen cult horror.
So take me back to the first time you saw this movie because it seems like an intrinsic film.
Yeah. So I am a genre of homosexual that is their entire existence is defined by having a sister 3 years older than them. So like if you meet gay guys or queers that have like older brothers, they're like skewed in a like semi-traumatized way, but they're like understand the rules of AFL.
Yeah.
But if you met a millennial gay who had an older sister, they like understand about like the Spice Girls impulse body spray and like that kind of, they understand the culture.
Yeah.
And so I inherited all of these cultural touchstones from my sister. And so she would have brought The Craft home from the store on one of our many outings with our father to the store to go and pick up new weeklies. And I think it was definitely in circulation. And I think at some point we must have purchased it.
Yeah.
Which was like, it's going into the official collection.
And what is it about this film that like persists with you now?
I mean, I think it's a perfect film. I think it's an accidentally perfect film that like remains, like a lot of things have not aged well. The politics inside of them haven't aged well, but I think The Craft remains like so sharp and perhaps in a way that it wasn't initially intended. Like I think, and I don't know if it's necessarily the work of Andrew Fleming, who's the director, and I don't know if it's the original script. I think it's like a weird thing that happened between them, this incredible cast, and like it just felt like a series of accidents that allowed it to become this like perfect feminist manifesto that to me is like about like third wave feminism and about like the intersection of like when a wealthy girl comes into the lives of like three kind of more marginalized women and like they try and take the reins on like their young femininity and try and claim power.
Yeah.
And how as a result of women trying to claim power, they're punished and then destroyed.
And I think that's how the witch kind of lives in popular culture. Yeah, yeah. And this is like the perfect like 90s encapsulation of that.
Well, the beginning of the like abandoning the crone and beginning of the sexy witch.
The sexy witch. Yeah. And to me as a young kid, like Firouza Balk, I think is just an example of perfect casting in this because she has like this darkness, this attitude to her, but she also has this playfulness. But then to, you know, elicit the title of this film, she has the craft as
she
well.
She does.
Like she's just a magnificent actor who I think is just a rare, rare example of someone who's so perfectly placed in this film and yet has other great films that maybe even live on in a bigger popular consciousness than
this
one does. It's
crazy though. I feel like why do we not have more like you could imagine a world where Firouza Balk is like a prolific Academy Award nominee. Like,
absolutely.
Like it's just like why did we not know what to do with Firouza Balk for all this time? Because she's so interesting.
And she's so singular and so, so striking.
Right?
There's a few great Firouza Balk movies. Like, obviously, like The Waterboy, she's fantastic
like,
in that.
Better than she needs to be in the girlfriend role in one of those films.
And then like, Return to Oz, of course, is like a cult classic. Yeah. There's a great film that she stars in. She plays Ione Skye and her play sisters called Gas Food Lodging. And it's like early 90s indie hit
Baby
film.
Firouza.
Yeah, she's fantastic in it. Great film, Gas Food Lodging. But I think she's just like, this is an example of like casting perfection. And the cast around her as well is just like this usual suspects of like people of
it
that time.
It was Neve Campbell before she broke. It was the same year that Scream, I think she'd just done Scream.
And Skeet Ulrich in this as well.
Skeet, incredible, who got in because he was friends with Empire Records.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Robin Tunney.
Robin Tunney.
Yeah.
Robin Tunney, who's also incredible. And she just done Empire Records, just shaved her head for that, her heads. And is just like, so the whole thing is a wig.
Yeah.
But she's so fucking good. And then Rachel True, who's also amazing in that film. Like, it's just, as a four, perfect casting.
And even beyond that, I think Christine Taylor as like the villain in this film,
which
I just love Christine Taylor, and she brings like this great attitude to the role,
kind of someone else that like why is she not one of a bigger actor, like she's so good, because this is like must have been within a year that she does the Brady Bunch, two completely different performances with like really like striking, like she's one of the funniest women. Like the Marsha performance in Brady Bunch is like
phenomenal,
second to none, so funny. But then this is like so dark, and what she does, and like there's a scene in this film where she's like in the shower and her blonde hair, she's the bully, she's the racist bully, explicitly racist, which I think is like really valuable and what kind of keeps this important and what the kind of the craft requel thing didn't understand is that like what is great about this film is that all of the kind of noxious, awful, evil things that are happening to these women, it's all named and it's all explicit in the text. So it's like this one black girl that goes to this all-white Catholic school is not just like people are being mean to me because I'm poor or whatever kind of what would happen in a contemporary teen film where they just like magically don't have any awareness of race and how it exists inside of these communities. Instead, they have, that blonde bully.
Yeah, the
is
blonde, beautiful,
gonna
blue-eyed girl.
Say really fucked up, racist shit, and that's going to be the fire, the reason for her to kind of want to destroy her. And when she does, this blonde girl has her hair falling out in the shower and she's crouched down and it's like a giant blistering bald patch. And she's like, it just keeps coming out. It's one of the most haunting images.
It really is.
Incredible.
Can you tell me about the aesthetic of this film? Because I think it's like so strong that it places witches within Catholic and that within the context of 90s Catholic schoolgirl.
It's so, there's all the Catholic iconography, which feels very in line with like Stigmata when that came out. Like, you know, iconic.
Yes. That gritty Catholicism of the 90s.
Sexy nightclub, Alison Dubois. And then there's like the things at play are like all the like Catholicism in like a 90210 style LA. But the way that they depict LA in this film is really interesting because it's like all of this decay. So it's like the way that, you know, this place that is so like bright lights and shiny city in the 90s becomes like, no, it's fucked up, LA. It's like a mattress tossed aside in an empty lot where there's homeless people and maybe a stray palm tree and then just like insane amounts of rain in LA. But like, it's really scary the way that they show this world outside of like these girls' kind of little sanctuary of this like private school. And it's kind of interesting that this was so close to Clueless, which is like such a picture
similar
book.
It feels like similar cast. Like it's like, I mean, Breckin Meyer's in both, but it's just like there's one removed from each one. Like it's the dark side of Clueless.
Do we not have a kind of Brat Packy style thing happening anymore? Like who are the kids?
Probably Jacob Elordi, probably anyone that appeared in the Kissing Booth movies.
I think
or
if Jacob had come up in this era, he would have spent another 5 to 10 years playing teenagers.
Oh, absolutely.
But unfortunately now they're just casting real teenagers.
Which is a shame.
It's a sickness.
We need to get a, you know, you got to become like a Stockard Channing. You know, I think we're both still younger than she was when she was in
Greece. I want Stockard Channing to go back now and be like Kissing Booth 3.
Dude, let's reboot Greece and Stockard Channing is back.
Bring Greece, come on, Greece 2.
I think they should really redo Greece again, and tragically we have lost a few of them, but Travolta and Stockard still keep them in.
I mean, John looks good.
Thank you for saying so.
He looks really good. I saw him the other day.
Where?
Not in life. Oh,
okay.
But just in like a video.
Yeah.
He was at Elrond's birthday.
Oh, good.
The toupee is sitting correct.
Oh, he's got the toupee back on because he was going chrome dome for a while.
Yeah, which was good when he was doing his villain thing, but I'm glad he's back.
I'm so glad you say that because I think he's the most beautiful man in film history.
He really
and
is.
And people really don't say it enough these days.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a bizarre story, which is one of my friends, her ex-boyfriend ended up getting married to Riley Keough.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know where this is going.
He was a stuntman on Mad Max, and she was on that film. And they fell in love during this whole kind of crazy, you know, time in Africa and then time doing the reshoots. And then fell in love. Anyway, years pass, and they like decide that they're going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friend and her boyfriend, my other friend, get invited to this small, like, intimate LA wedding of Elvis Presley's granddaughter and this like stunt boy from Byron Bay, and they were like, it was so chic. The gals were a bit mean,
but
John was a legend on the dance floor.
Oh my god,
he was
to see
like
John dance
a wedding dance. And he, like, got everyone involved.
Oh, my God.
Like, danced up on all the boys, you know.
Oh, my God. Do you think if he played Saturday Night Fever, John would dance?
Absolutely. I don't think he's precious. I think he's tasted obscurity too many times.
Yeah.
And with those people, they're always willing to play the hits.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Before we move on, the last thing I say of the craft, we should talk about Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. Yeah. I know it was a tongue twister, but a truly iconic scene.
I mean, it's just the visual effects in this film, and this is kind of, if you had the misfortune of watching the David Duchovny requel, which is bad, like so bad.
I could not bring myself
to don't do it. But they have Firuza come back in the end because she's the mysterious mother of one of the divas. She's gotten out of the hospital.
God, I might watch that again. Yeah. Now you may have made me
but
want
David
to watch
Duchovny
it.
David Duchovny plays an evil warlock.
Oh,
and
nice,
is like
I guess.
Conjuring fireballs in his hand. And I'm like, the thing that this film captures so beautifully about kind of teen magic is that like all teen girls and gays go through a phase where you're like, we can do magic.
It's like this.
I'm an evil witch.
It has the sleepover feeling.
Yes.
That I think is
never
essential for this film to feel like a teen film and a witch film.
Nothing happens inside of the film that could not be explained away. And I love that element where it's like, you feel like these things happen. Like when Firuza Balk puts a curse on her stepfather or whatever, he dies. So it's like to her, that's the kind of story you might relay as a teenager. Mm. Be like, well, it was me. I put that spell on him. But in actuality, like, that could just happen. And so, like, there's nothing that happens in this film that breaks the reality of, like, did it happen? Did it really happen? Because all of the things that happen at the end are kind of like, was that just in your head?
Yeah.
Were you just spooked? So I love The Light as a Feather because it feels like it is just both sides in this kind of, like, is it that she's actually levitating, or is it just that feeling you that have when you're delusion. At a yeah slumber party? Be like, no, 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 we're magic. We're actually doing it. And I love the way the effects are done because they never call attention to themselves. They're beautiful. They're just small and practical. It's really fun.
Beautiful pick. That is The Craft from 1996.
Watch The Craft.
Watch The Craft.
And then watch Witchy Girls. A very similar show.
I think it's a great though. I reckon if you do the two episodes, then you watch The Craft, then you do the next two episodes of Witchy Girls, then I would say let's chuck in this next pick from our weekly files that you've got here. 1999, maybe the classic horror film of that turn of the millennium period. You've picked up the truly iconic The Blair Witch Project.
Horror. Do you think it might be the best horror film ever made?
Every time I revisit it, I'm in complete awe of it because I think what it does so well is I love documentary filmmaking and I love an unbroken spell that this casts, which is it never lets up that it is not real. And what you're seeing, like there's no winking, there's no nodding, there's nothing to it. It is just completely spellbinds you in the feeling you are watching snuff, basically.
Yeah.
Or you are watching these lost tapes that these young student documentarians went out to try and make to discover the Blair Witch.
Yes.
And it's so convincing that I can't imagine seeing it at one of those early screenings or even just a cinema screening because it had the best marketing like platform of all time.
And like, obviously it did destroy the lives of the people involved. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the film is more important.
Well, Joshua Leonard, he still acts. He's in another one of my favorite movies. He's in Hump Day. So I think he's one of the – I really love there. Joshua Leonard.
It's to me a perfect film and a film that like if you're going to do this kind of the genre that it kind of invented or at least popularized
the found footage horror,
it's like even watching what was it Hell House it's like
is Hell House the stream vlogger?
They're like no, they're setting up like a haunted house in like an American town.
Oh yes, yeah.
And it turns out that there's a gateway to hell or something. Anyway, the thing that doesn't understand that makes this so vital is that it just like in a real documentary, you don't really expect to ever see anything captured on camera. Yeah. That's kind of the promise. Is like, well, this is real. So it's like, of course, things are a bit slower. And of course, the camera's never trained on the thing that's actually happening. And it, once again, has that plausible deniability thing. And like the way that this film just never shows you anything. Like, it's so incredible. And also just the lead performance by, oh my God, what's her name?
Let me get it.
Is a type of woman that I don't think I've ever seen captured.
Heather Donahue.
Heather.
Who changed her name. It's her name in the film.
Heather. But she, I don't think that this type of woman has ever been captured.
Yeah.
This American woman. And it's like, there's something so specific. And like, kind of having now, in film school and since then, it's like, this is actually just a horror film about being a woman trying to make a student project with two men. And, like, them just completely ignoring you and, like, not having any interest in you. And I like how, like, her character isn't polished or anything. Like, she's not a good person. She's not necessarily, like, this virtuous, like, perfect human being in the mix. She's, like, bossy and problematic and, like, the way that their fights feel very organic and you can understand why everyone's angry at each other. But, like, she is so interesting as a character, and it's so interesting to just put this specific type of woman that has never appeared on a screen before or since in the middle of a horror film. It's like, ugh.
And the way that exact placement of that character, like the way that the tension builds within her as like this exasperated, like desperate feeling within her, it just works so well at translating those fears. And like this kind of unraveling of this person for you, the viewer watching, you go like, oh fuck. Like, like you said, you don't see those characters on screen before, but everyone's met them in real life.
Well, exactly. And also that feeling of responsibility is like one that is not really contended with in horror. Like the feeling of, putting people in a situation where you're now the reason that they're going to die. And because horror is so much about the individual and their survival. And so making this horror that's about a social dynamic is really interesting. And like even in something like The Descent, like where these women kind of thrown, like there's like I think one scene where they argue about like, well, you're the reason, like, but that feels very rote.
Yeah.
Whereas like the weight of Heather feeling like she is the reason her classmate is now missing is so sad and so like it's palpable. It adds to this, like, it's a different kind of horror that it's like, what if you were responsible for the death of someone else and someone that you know, like, you know very well. It's really scary.
And so much of that performance comes through in like allowing that dialogue to be like truly, you know, mumblecore style improvised without it being like too rote. Like, it is just the people expressing themselves while they kind of pretty much do actually fucking lose their minds out in these woods.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about it as a witch film? Because it's kind of like, in, I guess, the until, you know, the actual film, The Witch.
The
double V witch comes out.
Yeah.
I think this is, until that point, the definitive witch film of like modern cinema, but it doesn't even have a physical manifestation of a witch character
they,
in it.
They apparently had shot witch content for the film and then cut it out.
I reckon it should have been the Kransky sisters.
Just like I love the kind of the way that a fabled witch. Mm. The unseen witch is so, I mean, it's the thing we were saying about The Craft, or the thing I was saying about The Craft is like, it's the less you know and the more your mind invents about this like scorned woman in the forest waiting to claim her victims. I think I love as well that Heather is the left unkilled by the end, because perhaps the witch relates needs a mate. To her torment.
Yeah, the witch needs a friend. Have you seen any of the sequels?
Yes.
I quite like the Book of Shadows.
Yes,
Blair Witch 2. I actually quite liked it. I never saw it till last year.
It's like it feels very hermetically sealed inside of a set that is like an exterior graveyard, which is something I really like.
Yeah, like truly the like as low budget as the Blair Witch Project feels, it feels infinitely bigger budget than the sequel, which is like the fakest looking set.
MTV original, like it's bizarre. And like they really go in, they're like, what if you actually saw the scary witch?
Yeah, and,
like,
and the movie exists already. It's got this weird meta thing in it.
It's a perfect film, probably. We should have chosen that.
I really like it. I remember
we should have done The Craft, New Beginnings. The Craft
remake and Blair Witch 2.
Yeah.
After I saw Blair Witch 2 for the first time, I literally texted the filmmaker Alice Mayo Mackie, and I was like, this is a kind of crap film that you love. You have to see it this week.
And
she loved it.
Perfect. Well,
and I remember the newer sequel that's just called Blair Witch.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
I was so excited for it and it let me down so bad. But not good. I always have hope that the Blair Witch, this one movie exists, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But I always think that something could happen in that
You think
space.
There's another...
I think something could happen.
What is
Maybe it? A reality show where they send people out of the woods.
Have you seen that reality show called Scream Queens? With James Gunn as one of judges?
Yeah.
It's one of the most horrific, like, demonic pieces of content, and I encourage everyone to watch
it. It's torturing.
It because it's these young women in the era of, like, just before America's Next Top Model, perhaps, no, it would have been, like, after the second or third. And they're, like, young, skinny women who have been hired by James Gunn and cronies to, like, audition to become the next Scream Queen, like Jamie Lee Curtis or whatever, in Saw 10.
Yeah.
And it's, like...
Because from the Saw movies. She's like the co-host.
Oh,
right?
Shawnee
Smith.
Yeah, Reggie from Becca.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, she comes in and she's like, if you're going to be a scream queen like me,
oh my God,
you've got to be able to turn it out at a moment's notice.
Did you know you had that impression in you? Because that was spot on.
Wow, Snatch Game. but she is incredible because she also doesn't care if these women live or die.
Yeah.
And she is just like in and out, like does not care. Mm-hmm. And James Gunn is really creepy. And really like, they're like, we want to see hot chicks with your racks out. So this is what it takes to be. When I made my film Slither, this is what it was like. And like the challenges he's tweeted like, now, Tacoma, get into the bath and take your top off. And then we're going to drop live scorpions on you. And she's like, okay, I hope this is my big break. But then they also film them like in the SUVs going out after the show because that used to be much more of a part of reality TV.
Yep.
And the girls are all profoundly racist to the one black contestant.
Wow.
And, like, say the N-word to her and just say that she, like, is a, like, mammy who needs to go back to the South. And I was like, what is this? Like, so it's like this one force of misogyny.
Yeah.
And then this one other force of racism just crushing these women.
And this was American television for many years.
And there's two seasons. And I tried to show my friend in that kind of camp when she's like, listen, I know that this is your zhuzh, but I can't watch this because this is like a violation of the Geneva Convention. Like, this is sick. And the black girl ended up winning. And then she was in Sortan. And then she was in that self-help group of people that had been killed by or survived Jigsaw.
Survived Jigsaw.
And cut off her hands. And that's about the Blair Witch.
And that is all we have to say about the Blair Witch. One of the great horror films of all time.
And I showed my friends the Blair Witch and was like, have you seen this documentary?
Oh, did you pull it off?
They really were like freaked out when we were like, 14.
You did one of the great services to cinema.
I know. Day. I feel like, you know, and they were like, and they sat there after the film had ended and were like,
yeah.
What now?
Oh, what? I love to hear it. Yeah. You've got one final movie here, and this is a very beautiful film starring one of the greatest
horror films of all time.
Well, I think if you can't stand sincerity, then you would find this a horror film.
Yeah. Yes.
This is a beautiful film starring one of the great, and from the creative mind of one of the great theater performers of all time.
True.
And one of the great screen presences as well, Harvey Fierstein. It is Torch Song Trilogy.
Drama.
And this is from 1988. This is a film I'd wanted to see for a very long time. It's been hard to find here in Australia, but I watched a DVD copy from my film school library because I just really wanted to see Harvey Fierstein get to be the lead in a film because I idolized this man.
Yeah,
I
think he's the best.
One of the most beautiful performers and soulful performers ever.
Incredible. And one of the most intelligent human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, just the eloquence that spills from this man. So Harvey Fierstein, homosexual, came up off Broadway, had written this kind of semi-autobiographical piece about, like, working as a female impersonator and then having a very, like, Orthodox Jewish mother and then living in New York. So that's, like, the kind of thing. And it follows him through, like, three periods in his life.
Yeah, the trilogy.
Thus the trilogy. And then they decided after the success of the play, which went to Broadway and did really well and is incredible, that they were going to make a film adaptation of it with Harvey reprising his role, thank Christ.
Yeah.
And then, they managed to condense this, like, larger show into this fabulous film that is – it does – feel like you're watching a play, but it is perfect. Everything about it is perfect. It's my favorite film. And my dad had found it in a JB Hi-Fi discount bin.
Yeah.
You know, the $5.99.
Of course.
And he got it for me, and I got it for Christmas, I think, when I was like 14. And he was like, this film I think you're really going to like. And I remember, like, started watching it, and then, like, the fires were happening in the hills.
Yeah.
It was like Black Saturday.
Yeah.
And then we have to evacuate because I lived up in the Dandenong Ranges. He was like, we have to evacuate. And I was like halfway through the film, kind of like edging towards the door, being like, just a sec, something's happening.
Yeah, I want to be engulfed in these flames watching this.
Yeah,
this
I was like, is maybe the real it's torch worth song. And then that film became like my obsession and just like has kind of predicted a lot of things about the way, or perhaps guided the way that I live my life, because it's like becomes a drag queen, which I didn't know about myself at the time, and then like has the unfortunate part of his life where he dates a bisexual man, and then, you know, has to make it through that and has an incredible, fabulous mother. And
when you saw it young, what do you think it was that drew you in? Do you think it was like seeing this, like, a world in front of you?
Yeah, I think I was out as a gay child pretty early, like when I was 13. And so I think it was just like any piece of explicitly gay media was like very exciting. But particularly one where it was not about – like there is tragedy in it.
But it's like the tragedy of like a normal life. Yeah. You know? It's not cinematically enhanced in those kind of ways.
And it's not – it doesn't – it's not cloying. Like, I think that the film is so funny.
Yeah.
The writing is so quick and witty.
Like, when I say it's sincere, like, it is sincere, but sincere from the mind of Harvey Fierstein. Right. It's, like, one of the funniest, most touching, and, like, has, like, just this very light touch, but then the gruffest voice, so everything kind of, like it evens out beautifully.
Yeah, Anne Bancroft.
As his mother, perfect casting.
Anne Bancroft is kind of, like, the Mount Rushmore of women that we lost too soon.
Yeah.
We have been deprived of a kind of later stage career of Anne Bancroft, who is just like never bad. And never. Playing this like incredibly loving, overbearing Jewish mother is one of the like just most beautiful things you've ever seen. And like there is not a time where I watch this film that I'm just not reduced to tears as she goes through. And there's this phenomenal final kind of act of the film, which is about, you know, them coming together and having to reckon with the fact that she thinks that his lifestyle is wrong and he has to just be honest to who he is but still craves a relationship with her because that's his mother. And like they have these fights, these kind of two fights where they're throwing back this repartee and it's like it's so beautifully written and just like as just text you could read it and just sob. But like it's just so beautiful because you really understand why Anne Bancroft believes that like culturally like he's going to hell not hell but like he's doing things that are against God and like this is like fundamental to her faith and everything she believes and she doesn't understand why he can't change and he knowing what she knows is like no but you need to understand this is like fundamental to me I can't not be this thing and it's so beautiful.
You put it so well. That is Torch Song Trilogy.
Perfect.
Beautiful, beautiful film. And worth tracking down.
And young Matthew Broderick looking like a hottie.
My God.
Like a snack.
Yeah, he's a snack to Harvey.
I understand what SJP was talking about.
Yeah.
He's a cutie patoot.
There's a movie I just thought of just then that it's a rare film. The one directorial credit for Anne Bancroft. She directed this movie called Fatso. Have you seen Fatso?
I haven't seen it, but fuck me. That's crazy. Who produced it? Was it Mel?
Must be, because it's got, you know, their dear friend Dom DeLuise at the start. Yeah. It's like I can't remember if she's his mother in that or if they're siblings.
I think it's the mother. I've not seen it, but I have.
You, like me, have learned everything about it before because you couldn't see the movie.
Staff pick.
Well, ladies, we've come to the part of the show where I must give you a recommendation based on your taste. And I have actually, there's two that I want to give you. Because I'm going to give you one new and one old. We're going to go contemporary and then we're going to go back in time. And I think I'm going to go with the old first because there was something that came up in our conversations that I didn't anticipate, but it makes so much sense. These are both witchy like
Toy
films.
Story. Have you
seen Toy Story? Buzz Lightyear and Woody, they're best friends.
They're kind of like witches. They come to life when no one's watching.
Well, I believe that it was a witch's curse that brought all the toys to life.
Prequel. Let's write it down.
But there's this film from 1962, directed by Sidney Hayes, called Night of the Eagle.
Horror.
Night of the Eagle. Let me write this down.
I would say, a bad title for this movie because it has an alternate American title called Burn, Witch, Burn.
Oh.
And this
Sorry?
Is it's a very simple plot.
Yeah.
It is a woman who may be a witch defends her husband from forces attempting to harm him.
Amazing.
And it is just this great, spooky little thriller. And this American cut opens with this eerie black screen and a direct address from the voice that is guaranteeing the audience that we are safe from the evil incarnations we're about to witness. And it feels like it's kind of actually imparting this power spell over you while you're watching it.
Stealing this.
You have to watch this movie.
That's incredible. Burn, Witch, Burn.
It has like this, I think it's a really, it's got a great eye, this film. It's got this, like, I think it's one of my favorite witch films that I don't think it ever gets talked about.
Yeah.
And when I put it on, because it's called Night of the Eagle, I was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah. And finally a bird documentary I can get behind.
I had no idea there was going to be a witch film. And I think it's just such a ripper. But you have to try and watch the Burn, Witch, Burn. They're almost identical, but you just want to see that title come up.
I mean, listen, if you come to Witchy Girls or, you know, see it online and see that exact title card come up in front of it, you know I'm not gonna pay you royalties for that.
And the other thing, the other reason why I think it fits and quite apropos, because this film is written by three writers: George Baxt, Charles Beaumont, and Richard Matheson. Mm. Richard Matheson of those three is the most famous. He's a famous science fiction author. I think that he wrote I Am Legend.
Ah.
He's of that ilk. But all of those men that wrote this are the famous writers of the Twilight Zone. The aforementioned show that you said inspired perfect. You and your father many
They love
a ago.
Long trial in the Twilight Zone as well.
They do indeed. But this is a really cool film. A little bit hard to find, but worth your time trying to find it. Okay. There's a Blu-ray from Imprint Films in Australia that is worth tracking down.
Okay, I'm on the case.
But I think you really like that. And I have a modern witch film that I was lucky enough to see at South by Southwest Sydney last year as part of the
la-dee-da.
Jury. I was a jury on there. I was a juror.
You want to pick up the names you just dropped?
Yes. I uttered the name South by Southwest Sydney and now defunct film festival that doesn't exist anymore, even 1 year later.
Yeah, did you say Sydney at the end?
No, it was Sydney.
Yeah.
But it is a Spanish language film called The Virgin of the Quarry Lake.
Horror. Okay, amazing.
And this, when I watched this, I was like, it's set in 2001,
yeah,
turn of the millennium, and it is about, I'm just going to read you the plot synopsis I has here on Letterboxd. One hot summer at the beginning of the new millennium and on the eve of the great economic crisis of 2001, a group of adolescent girls fall madly in love with a boy called Diego. The romance is interrupted when Diego starts hanging out with Sylvia, a 30-year-old woman he met in a chat room. Then Natalia, one of the teenagers, decides to turn to the knowledge of her grandmother Rita and thus ward off the disappointment by using an ancient dark power. And to me, this felt like, I guess, like a Spanish language version of The Craft, but in a completely spellbinding way, because it's like young teenage witches, but in a way that feels like more darker and devious than The Craft.
I like it.
I really love this film, and it was one of those ones I watched. And it wasn't my direct, like, it wasn't the one I go, we have to give this one an award.
Yeah.
But it was the film where I said.
You heard it here first, folks. She denied you.
But the way that I thought about this film was, I was like, this is the film, all the films I watched at South by Southwest that year, this is the one where my relationship with the film is just beginning. Like,
yeah.
This is one that I think is going to persist with me for a long time. I'm going to be seeing it again in my life. And so much so that I bought the novel like that is based on. I think it's based on a book. Shit, something just happened. It's based on a book by Mariana Enriquez, and she's like a horror writer. And I was like, I want to see, like, I want to read the original text is for this.
And how was? Have you finished it?
I've not started it yet, okay. But I did buy it. But my relationship, like I said, it's just starting. Just I'm still beginning. In the just starting stage. Just all these other. months later.
Is that like? Do you entertain a few dalliances with media long form that you're like, I'm going to love this in 5 years.
I think so. I think I love to dalliance. Dalliances that last decades and decades.
You're like, I still have your number saved in my phone. I'll check back in it, but you're not winning an award today.
Not today, but I really love that
what
film.
What did you guys give the awards
to? I think it was to Weed Eaters. The Weed Eaters, a great New Zealand comedy that is getting released in New Zealand and Australia very soon.
Who's releasing it in Australia?
I actually don't know. Probably a madman is my guess.
Yeah, an insane
person.
Throwing laser discs at people.
But that's it. I think you would love that movie,
okay,
too.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, Lazy, thank you for joining me here in the Last Video Store.
Hey. It was a fucking joy.
Truly.
Thank you for coming to my house.
My pleasure to bring the store to you today.
Yeah.
You picked up a great batch of movies: The Craft, The Blair Witch Project, Torchstone Trilogy, The Virgin of Quarry Lake, and Night of the Evil Eagle, a.k.a. Burn Witch Burn. And you've got The Witchy Girls coming out very soon.
Check out The Witchy Girls, and I'll be back here when we made a film.
Oh, you will be back here. Well, you know, I do hear the whispers and twinkles.
Whispering
that
and rumbling. I was really like, I've got to hold out on Alexi until I have become a more well-schooled cinephile.
No.
And then B, and a better person.
Yeah.
And then
and B, I have something to promote.
Yeah, and then C, if I actually make a feature film, because, oh my God, watching you, like, interview first-time directors that are like, I did it, I've ascended.
And, well, you'll be back when you make the feature because, you know, I hear the whispers.
They're whispering.
I hear the whispers.
I hear those whispers.
And they're getting louder and louder every day.
But yeah, Witchy Girls, check it out. It's going to be a fun time. You can come to the live show if you live in Victoria. And if you live elsewhere, you can always buy a plane ticket. I hear they're cheap.
For a very short time, book them now.
Book them now. Yeah, book or drive now. Down.
Oh, yeah, drive down. Yeah, or get the train.
Car. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Get the train from wherever you are.
Get Perth? Get the train.
Get the that's really scary. But thank you so much for joining me, Lazy.
Thank you.
And thank you to all our dear listeners and viewers, the Return Shoot Rats, for tuning in to another episode of The Last Video Store. Until next time, see you at the movies, dude.
See you in hell.
The Last Video Store.
So that was our chat with Lazy Susan, baby. How good was Lazy? You haven't heard it yet. You're about to edit the episode.
Shush, podcast magic.
Podcast magic, I know, but you're about to edit it, but you're going to love it.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't know this yet. They're in full drag.
I have seen that, and they look awesome. Yeah, so cool. If you are just listening to this and you have never watched us, you can find full episodes on YouTube.
Exactly. I wish we had said that at the top of the episode. I forgot entirely.
I think, have we ever said that?
I'm sure we have. But definitely go watch it because you're going to see Lazy, one of the best drag queens in Australia, in full freaking drag.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, like I said at the start, come see my show at the Sydney Comedy Festival. I'm in Brisbane this weekend. There's a couple of tickets left because we just put some extra tickets out. So if you're listening to this right now, my first show is tonight,
mm-hmm.
and it's maybe like 4 or 5 tickets left for the rest of the run. So pick them up right now.
You gotta.
And then come see me in Perth. I'm desperate to sell those tickets.
Come on, Perth. Come on, Return Perth. Shoot Rats.
Come to Perth. In the meantime, also come see Cam and I hosting a movie of True Stories at the Sydney Opera House. Tickets to that in show notes too. In the meantime, thanks for joining us for these fortnightly episodes. Next time, new episode with one of your favorite people, Nate Valvo.
Yes.
One of my dear friends, and you were so excited that Nate did the podcast. It's a good one.
I'm excited.